National Book Award winner. You can go to our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Mike Burke. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Everyone, this is Jay Koronek, and this begins our hour of public affairs news about Dearborn and the nearby communities. Our show is called the New WHFR Journal. That was our theme that we borrowed from that CBS TV show a few years ago, and they don't seem to mind. They probably don't know, of course, but the whole idea is we're digging deeper into the news, into the local news, and making comments and stating some opinions that you won't hear anywhere else on the radio dial. And we hope that you'll see that as a public service, especially to stimulate your thinking about what's going on in the world. I'm joined here in the station by our WHFR news director, John Conroy. Hi there, John. How you doing today?
Very well.
Are you the one that brought the sour cream cake donut holes into the station?
I brought those in today, yes.
I don't know why I can't hear you. Let's put your voice on. There was a mic check test. So.
Okay.
So he brought in those donut holes. Those are semi-toxic, aren't they, John, in large quantities?
Well, they're certainly not for me right now, but I wanted to make sure that all the rest of the good people had
John
a snack.
John is watching his sugar levels, as everybody should.
And some potato chips as
well. So thank you very much for contributing to the ill health of the WHFR members. I'm sure they will disappear quickly here. And then there was a big bag of potato chips,
right,
too?
Chips as well, yep.
Oh, my gosh.
People can enjoy those chips and have a snack.
Did you know that theoretically eating salty, oily potato chips, the bad kind, is actually improves your voice for vocal performance? Yes,
well,
it was a
good
trick that was, she thought it was a trick. Amy Grant, the so-called Christian pop singer from the 70s on through today, she started telling people that that's how she got this unique quality to her voice when she was recording. She would eat potato chips before every major session, before every take. She'd have another chip or two. And there's something about the salt and the oil that sort of lubricate her voice, her vocal cords, to do what she needed them to do, of course. So other people now have used that as an excuse who are vocalists of one sort or another, including some announcers and some DJs now are sure to eat chips. You just have to remember to chew them up well and swallow them before you go on the air. You don't want to have potato chips dangling in your mouth while you're trying to talk. That would be a problem.
But it would seem to lend to voice cracking, Jay.
Yes, definitely would. So, in any event, here we are for the May 12th edition. I guess it's our Valentine's Day edition. Oh, boy. We're all full of love and kindness. Yeah, okay, John, thank you. We have somebody that came to the door. We want to see if that's someone who wants to get into our office. They didn't bother to read the buzz the buzzer, which we have. But okay, so let me go on with some of the top stories of the day, because that's what we do here, and time is tick 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 going away. A couple stories from last week that weren't covered enough. During this show, you heard that the Women's Recognition Luncheon, which is an annual thing here at the college, and it was raising money to benefit the Student Outreach and Support Services and the Student Emergency Fund here at Henry Ford College. Big success, packed the place, a lot of famous people here, as I mentioned to you, not only Mayor O'Reilly, but also Debbie Dingell and many other community leaders, male and female. Okay, but there's a story in this Wednesday's Pressing Guide at the top of the page, and the one award that we couldn't mention because it was happening as we were on the air was the Women's Recognition Award for a female member of our campus community, and it went to Cynthia Pirelli, and we know her as Cindy, and so congratulations. She happens to be Let me get this right. Okay, continued on page 82. Nice story. Nice pictures. Well, one of them is kind of backlit, but that's what they make flashes for, you know. Anyway, Pirelli was selected because she, quote, embodies the description of the woman of the year, the selection committee said. Pirelli was surprised to win and promised the crowd she did not vote for herself. Throughout her career, Pirelli worked her way from Dearborn Public Schools to various roles at the college. She now is working at the Welcome Center, and that's a very important place because all the students coming here for the first time go to the Welcome Center. We have the admissions office and financial aid and counseling and so on over there. And I say over there because it's just on the north side of our main parking lot here on our main campus, 5101 Evergreen. Yep. She says another quote from Cynthia, I love HFC, and this means a lot. And she thanked those who selected her. So congratulations to Cynthia Pirelli on winning the HFC Women's Recognition Award of the Year. There were other awards, and I mentioned some of those last week, so I won't go over those now. Just go to the podcast and listen over again to the show. You know, this show is recorded so you can listen to it anytime it's convenient to you during the week. You want to catch up on what's happening in Dearborn and what are some of the ideas and opinions floating around there. That's what we're here for. Just go to WHFR.FM and click on Talk Shows in the center of the homepage, and then choose WHFR Journal, which is the abbreviated title of this show, and then select the appropriate date. Another award ceremony happened this week, and there was not any press coverage. There was a press release that went out in time, I thought, but neither of the papers mentioned the Mayor's Arts Awards. Okay, there was a big ceremony this last Wednesday evening, and but the press release went out January 29th, according to the sheet that I have here, and neither paper put anything in. Of course, we didn't know who the we did know who the winners were going to be from this press release. So the winners were known, but people in the community who weren't part of the arts community anyway didn't know about the time for the event, and even if it was mentioned a couple months ago when they got nominations from the community, people wouldn't have known. So admission was free, and the public are welcome to come and celebrate, and it was a very, very nice ceremony, and I mentioned that I usually attend, but this time, I'll save that for the last. The 2015 Arts Patron Award, and yes, I know it's 2016, but the awards are specifically for, like, what you did last year. I mean, so that's why it's the 2015 Arts Patron Award. Ken Wall Steele, and in his introduction to them, Mayor O'Reilly called them Severstall. They're not Severstall.
Not anymore.
But Severstall sold, and it's now Ken Wall. I think that's Kenwall is the new name of them.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's understandable. It's the same facility, but new owners, U.S. owners, not the Russians this time. So, the 2015 Volunteer Award, again helping one of the many, many nonprofits, and the Dearborn Community Arts Council actually coordinates the city, having Ralph Valdez at the head of that, doing a great job to try to coordinate all the different events, activities, any sort of problems and issues with the city or the community. That's his job as DCAC coordinator, and these organizations need volunteers. It's like WHFR. We have more than 50 volunteers, like yourself, John. I mean, we're not paying you any money. We couldn't afford the quality of your broadcasting if we did have money. Right. Anyway, and he brings in donut holes for us and potato chips. So what a guy, you know. It must be hard to choose the volunteer of the year, because you got like 50 or more nonprofits in Dearborn, including people who do. There was some sort of rug making group China Painting Group I know of. There's all different kinds of arts and crafts, and they have organizations and all kinds of things you can join. But it's great to be together. Anyway, the person they chose this year was a Margaret Schaefer, who apparently has been a volunteer for many, many years. All kinds of great stories about her. And I hope that when they do have a story in the Dearborn papers, that they'll go into a little more detail about the background of these individual people.
Well, and we had Margaret Schaefer on our radio program not too long ago. Right before one of their big fundraisers in October.
And she was talking
She was talking about the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra.
There you go. I knew I saw her somewhere before.
Oh, yeah.
Right here on
right
my
here.
Show.
Yep.
I'm always just looking at the control console. I don't look at my guests. I just listen to them in my headphones. That's a bad excuse.
She was very good, and
yes.
She had a lot to say.
Everybody knew her, and they knew her of the excellence of her volunteering. And the 2015 Artist Performer Award, the next award mentioned here, Joseph Deller, who actually apparently is an adjunct teacher here at Henry Ford College, but in fact, he's pretty much the head conductor of the Dearborn Youth Symphony. No. Well, he's an artist in his own right. And in fact, I sometimes wonder, because this often happens, he performed along with a member of the Dearborn Youth Orchestra at one of the breaks in the session. They always have some performances for this classy event. To entertain the audience and so on. And it's happened in the past, and I guess that's a good idea, because the audience gets to hear the quality of the performer who just won the award. But he was great. He was absolutely great. And all these people, been working a long time. And then the 2015 Arts Organization Award went to the Arab American National Museum. I think they're still celebrating their 10 years, probably 11 years now, that they've been organized and developing. And they are the Arab American National Museum. They're the only one in the country that has the scope and the background and the tremendous exhibit. So if you haven't caught that, you need to go over there and catch it. It's right across Michigan Avenue on the north side of the former location of Dearborn City Hall. Now Art Space. And their director of the museum, Devin
Ackman,
yep. We had here on this show.
Yes, we did.
Very, very dynamic young gentleman, very articulate, and of course we wish them well. They've got a big event coming up tonight, the start of a special music series that is continuing for this we want to call it, season, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but I'll just finish these awards first. The 2015 Mayor's Award for someone or some group that doesn't fit the other categories actually went to the Dearborn Youth Symphony, and two people accepted the award there. This is their 40th year of being a youth symphony, something like 3,000 students from the schools in the Dearborn area that have participated in that. I was thinking about WHFR, 30 years on the air, and we have about 50 people a year, so that's not quite the same, but still, 30 times 50 is what, 1,500, so although some people are the same through the years. Okay, that's just the way it goes. The DCAC, the Dearborn Community Arts Council themselves, along with the cable organization, cable channel Bravo, that put some money in there, honored Martin Zabosnik, who celebrates 10 years of his work at the Ford Center, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. I believe he helps coordinate the facilities, maybe scheduling or something. And haven't known him in the past, but I'm sure that anyone who's attended any of the activities at the Ford Community Performing Arts area over there definitely benefited from his expertise in designing and facilitating the performances. Okay, anyway, the last award, I'll mention it, not because it was to me, but because it honors WHFR. It is our 30th year, actually this year, it's the 31st year, but last year is the 30th year that we've been on the air, non-commercial educational station with the format that challenge you to think and to experience beyond what all the other media in Detroit provides. So very, very special sort of thing. And yeah, I've been the station advisor since before we got on the air and helped the station get the license and get on the air. And well, I'm still here, by golly. So they gave me the 2015 Arts Educator Award. I'm very honored. So many wonderful people from both this college and the community have gotten that designation and that honor in the past. And it's a great award to be part of that same group even. I'm very honored, but really WHFR and all of the volunteers made it possible. That's really what's going on here. It's bigger than one person, and I did challenge everyone attending to maybe tune us in. I'm sorry to say that a lot of people seemed like they didn't know what kind of music or information we had. None of them knew about the show.
No.
I don't think. Maybe the mayor did, because he's been on the show. But yeah, but he didn't speak up. And of course, they were all struck when I said, you know, you might think that we're as a college licensed station, just all that young person's music that's on the air. I mean, popular stuff, whatever. And there was just some sort of silence there. They seemed to be nodding their heads. Yeah, that's right. Just that young person stuff. And then I told them that we don't play what's popular. And they all went, oh, you know, how is that possible? How can you not play what's, we play what's equal to or better than what's already popular. We don't need to play what's already popular because it's already on all the other stations. So maybe we got a few converts, a few new listeners, either to this show or to our music shows anyway. But that was because of the award ceremony. There's not enough teachers that receive any kind of award or even recognition or respect, he says, my opinion there. And what about those opinions, John?
Yes, those opinions expressed by either one of our hosts on this show or just those opinions are ours, not necessarily the opinions or the views of WHFR or Henry Ford College.
That's right. So keep that in mind. But, you know, everything was great, and the teachers are respected within these awards by having a separate category, the Arts Educator Award. So we educate people with art, about art, or stimulate them to, you know, develop themselves within the art world too. I always thought that teaching, it was a matter of, yes, getting their attention at the beginning, which is the hard part really, but then also opening up the world a little bit for them, expanding their minds to their own potential, and showing them what enthusiasm for the subject matter and involvement in the subject matter, whatever the class is, can do for them, how they can really benefit from being involved in it. And then that they take it from there. I mean, once you give them the motivation and that enthusiasm, you know, not just a motivation like, well, you'll get a job out of this and they'll pay you money, but it's got to be something you love, really. And so I think successful teaching is a large part a work of art, because there's really not any hard and fast rules. There's principles, there's guidelines, there's ways to do outlines and that, but that's all pretty boring, actually. It's the day-to-day work that has to have a touch of something special, a special connection. So as I said, I'm honored in that category, just representing teachers in general, too. Well, okay, so I do think there'll be pictures and maybe a story giving you more background on those individuals and organizations that won these awards in the papers sometime next week. Maybe Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, maybe next Wednesday in the Press and Guide or the Times Herald, but I know that a lot of pictures were taken, and I think the story will be written to honor these people. It only happens once a year, and the free refreshments at the end were very good, too, John. You always like comments about the food. So.
Yep.
Okay.
I just want to say, you know, Jay, you created that spark in me, you know, once I started taking the class, that has, you know, continued to flourish all the way through this last couple of years. And I want to thank you for that and say congrats for that nice award.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much. And you inspire me every Friday.
One quick review I wanted to talk about was last Friday, February 5th. We had a table set up at the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra DSO's Pops concert, and Chelsea and I have sat at the table, and we got a chance to listen to some of the brass, Brassimataz, that was being played. The Ridenours, the father and son team, were a very, very talented group of two guys. You know, one, the father played the piano and conducted, and the son, Brandon, played many different types of trumpet, cornet, as well as a brass harmonica, which I'd never seen before.
Wow.
And went from the size of a brass harmonica all the way to flugelhorn. And it was extremely great, and it was also a kind of a funny, they had a almost like a Art Carney, Jackie Gleason kind of routine going for a while. They're playing the piano and almost falling off the bench, and it was very entertaining, and I want to thank everybody for putting on a great show, right. And we you know, we were there doing our normal thing with our table and handing out, you know, items.
Of course,
and,
since we do classical music over each night with live hosts out of Minneapolis, the so-called Classical 24 programming from Public Radio International that we subscribe to. So we definitely support classical music here, and of course the work of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. I think their next performance, I'm double checking, is March 4th. Yes, it's Friday, March 4th. The Symphony of Dearborn. If we say DSO, people will be confused.
Yes, sometimes with the other.
Because there's more than one DSO, yeah. Right? But anyway, so mark your calendars for that. There's only, I think, March and then April. That April is, I believe, the last symphony performance. And that's always great, a big finale. And that's going to be on April 22nd. Which is during our annual pledge week this year, by the way. So it'll be a big celebration. And if you are a resident of Dearborn, tickets are not too expensive, really. There's a range of prices, and you really should come and experience live music of the Dearborn Symphony. The Pops concert is, of course, always one of the more successful ones, because people recognize a lot of the music, because it's from either movies or
Broadway
yep. soundtrack, whatever. Yep. So yeah, but that's great. Yes, and thank you for being a volunteer to support WHFR at that, along with Chelsea, who is our promotions coordinator currently. Okay, two top stories that very recent here that have to do with the city council. The first one, and this was only in the Arab American News. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Why would it be in the Arab American News when it's a local story? It did happen Tuesday. Now, of course, the deadline for the Wednesday papers might have already passed. Okay, so, but, you know, there's websites. It's not on the Press and Guide website, you know.
Nope.
So, or Times Herald, they share a website with somebody else, don't they? Is it the News Herald? Yeah, well, anyway. Whoever it is. Here's the story. Dearborn City Council meeting abruptly ended in chaos after a group of protesters demanded answers about the deaths of two Detroit residents who were shot and killed by Dearborn police officers in the last 2 months. And we've done stories about each of them. The deaths of Kevin Matthew, 35, and Janet Wilson, 31, two African-Americans who were being pursued by Dearborn police during separate incidents, sparked outrage from civil rights groups and Detroit residents. Family members of both Matthew and Wilson said their loved ones suffered from mental disorders. Both families have spoken out against the Dearborn Police Department in the weeks following their deaths. Matthew's case is being investigated by the Detroit Police Department as his pursuit by a Dearborn police officer ended in the city of Detroit. Meanwhile, Wilson's is being handled by Michigan State Police as she was shot and killed within the Dearborn city limits following a chase that began at Fairlane Town Center and ended on Hubbard Drive. So the city of Dearborn went to an outside authority. Even though it was all a Dearborn event, they went to the Michigan State Police for investigation. So on Tuesday, February 9th, that's just a couple days ago, folks, this week, New Era Detroit, an activist group formed by Detroit residents in 2014 to empower African Americans and tackle issues that affect the community, they attended the city council meeting to voice concerns about the two incidents. At the end of the meeting, New Era Detroit leader Zeke Ned took the podium to demand that the officer who shot Matthew be identified and fired. Following the incident, the officer was placed on paid administrative leave. And the quote from Mr. Ned is, "I'm here to figure out what the city of Dearborn is doing about the murders of black people in the city. We still have a police officer on duty who shot and killed Kevin Matthew, who was unarmed. He went as far as going out of his jurisdiction into the city of Detroit, chasing this man for a misdemeanor," unquote. And of course, as we just heard from the story, is the officer is not technically on duty. He has not been identified, but he was put on paid administrative leave. Or does that mean that he's been giving administrative details? He's confined to a desk, maybe. I'm not sure what a paid administrative leave is. I don't think he was administrator in the first place, but I'm just thinking between the lines off the cuff here. So the man is not on duty in the same way anyway. We can say that, that officer. City Council President Susan DeBaggia told Ned that City Council members don't have more information about the investigation than what was already provided to the public. Quote, "As far as what's going on, that we are aware of is a complete and full investigation is being conducted," DeBaggia said. And she went on, "At this point, I know none of the council members here are at liberty to offer information until information is provided through the investigation," unquote. But Ned stressed that the city is able to take its own measures outside of the investigation, questioning why the officer still hadn't been fired. And he said, quote, "In our eyes, in the black community, it's like going on vacation after killing one of our family members. If one of your family members were shot by an armed police officer, you would want justice. You would demand justice," unquote. Ned also demanded transparency in the incident involving Wilson, demanding dash cams videos be released to the public. And DeBaggia went on, and here's a direct quote, "All I can tell you is that your concerns have been duly noted. I don't think anyone here would contest that justice is first and foremost. An investigation is being conducted." And, you know, if you want to ask someone, how's that investigation going, I think you could ask either the Detroit Police or Michigan State Police. But, of course, they're not going to say anything until they finish. Yeah, we're doing it. You know, it's in process. And we don't know how long it'll take. I mean, as long as it takes to get, you know, all the information, all the perspectives, all the data together. I kind of wonder how many people they have on those investigations. Do they have a task force? 40 or 50 people? Or they have one person? You know, I wonder. I'm just saying, because obviously the more people you have theoretically doing the investigation, it should speed it up.
The faster it should come to some conclusion.
I would assume so. Yeah. It would be easier to gather all the details, and then they have one big meeting, and they compare their notes, and somebody writes a report. So I'd kind of like to know that. I think that is fair to let us know how many officers of the Detroit Police Force and how many officers and who the Michigan State Police are actually doing this investigation. Although maybe they want to keep those officers who are doing the investigation out of the public light because it might interfere with their investigations. If they get their face or name out there, I don't know. Just wondering. I'm sure there's something to all of these different angles. Okay. But following Ned's address, individuals unaffiliated with his organization, New Era Detroit, took the podium to address the controversial shootings. A man who would not comply with DeBaggia's request to identify himself lashed out at the police department. He said, quote, "A badge is not a license to kill. The city council cannot be complacent in these racist killings," unquote, the man said. "We demand the city council to take immediate action to end historic racist harassment of Detroit neighborhoods. Detroit will no longer accept the second-class treatment. Ferguson will come to Detroit if there is no justice served for Kevin Matthew and Janet Wilson," unquote. Following more disorderly conduct, the article goes on to say, DeBaggia called for an end to the meeting. Councilman Robert Abraham attempted to intervene by telling the protesters the city council, quote, "doesn't appreciate the yelling," to which New Era Detroit members responded by saying, "we don't appreciate black people being killed in this city." Mm. Ooh. And after the meeting, Councilman Mike Sereni told the Arab American News, look at that follow-up by the reporter, trying to get individual statements afterwards, that Sereni said he believes investigations are being handled in a transparent manner. Yeah, well, of course, it's not completely transparent if we don't know how many and who's doing it. And, okay, so,
there's hopefully still some details out there.
Hopefully it'll all be transparent when the investigation is done. But right now, I don't think it can be transparent. I don't think that's what can happen. Anyway, Cerini said, we want to have complete transparency. That's why the Detroit police, well, it's not a matter of transparency. I think it's a matter of unbiased investigators, you know. Anyway, moving on, Cerini said that Mayor Jack O'Reilly agreed to hold individual meetings with each council member to brief them on the situation. The investigations? Well, that's what it says here. Cerini said that Mayor Jack O'Reilly agreed to hold individual meetings. Now, why would it have to be an individual meeting? To brief them on the situation. What situation? He's briefing them on the investigations? Well, he wouldn't be told what the investigations know until they're done.
And why not just with the group rather than individually? They're all going to be told the same thing, you would think.
Could it be that the reporter didn't quite make the sentence correct, maybe misunderstood what Cerini said, but I don't understand what those individual meetings would be and whether or not O'Reilly agreed to hold these meetings after this confrontational city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's already had individual meetings before, but what can he tell them? I don't think he can tell them more than what the police chief has made public,
because
the investigations are still going on. So I don't understand. That's the only sentence I don't understand there. Cerini concluded by saying, I feel confident that things are proceeding in the right direction. Well, yeah, until you find out they're not, I guess. You have to assume that. This week, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office stated the Matthews case still has not been handed over by the Detroit Police Department for possible charges. That means their investigation hasn't been completed yet, certainly. Michigan State Police have not given any further information about Wilson's case other than that her vehicle would be considered a weapon. We talked about this, you and I, when this came up, because I said, well, but she didn't have a weapon. Why did they fire into her car? Well, she did try to run down some guards at Fairlane Town Center with her car. Well, a car is a dangerous weapon.
Killer homicide, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we do know that the Michigan State Police do not believe, from this information we've got here, they wouldn't say anything more, but definitely her vehicle would be considered a weapon. So it wasn't that the police officer or officers fired at the woman, Janet Wilson. Yep. Because, you know, and she was unarmed. She did not have a gun, I guess, but you know, she did have the car. And that's a reason to prevent that weapon from being used anymore, I guess. I don't, you know, that's, again, we brought this up before. So thank you very much, Arab American News, for covering that. Certainly, it seems like the Dearborn City Council didn't do anything wrong in terms of these people, but these people did... speak out of turn, would not identify themselves, and they were yelling. So some of these quotes that I read to you might not have been as loudly, might have been much more loudly expressed at the city council meeting from the article. But you know, we're all certainly waiting for the outcome. And unlike there was a shooting in Chicago, it took like over a year for the investigation to finally come to light, and the video, they even had video to be released. That's way too long. I don't understand how an investigation takes a year unless they had one person on it in part time. You only hit his lunch hour, you know, once a week. Yeah. To I don't know, I'm making jokes, but you know, that didn't seem right at all. That was either a cover up hoping that some of the concern would disappear.
And as well, the St. Louis incident, too, took a long time before
it
was...
Well, you're right, yeah. Maybe we know more now. Maybe we're learning more. And John mentioned this to me when he came in, because the story about Mayor O'Reilly caught on camera?
Right, yep.
Where did you hear that?
I saw it on the news last night.
Okay. The video, too?
I didn't see the video. I just saw the report about it.
Okay. Well, because it got on television, folks, at this apparently the same council meeting, okay, which was Tuesday, somebody did I would guess it was a cell phone camera doing a video recording. And here's the story. Because, the Pressing Guide ran this one right away. They got it on their website today. So, but they didn't cover the city council meeting flare-up at all. That is not deserving of the press and guide's attention. But because it got on the television channels in Detroit, well, they had to have a story, right? Because it would look bad that Channel 7 or who DIV had it on the air, and they don't even have a story about it. So here it is. And there's a link. There's a link to the video. They linked the video in the story here, it says. So pressingguide.com. But again, it's a story I don't even think should have been covered. But here we go. Following a statement from City Councilman Tom Tefelsky about why he opposed the Veterans War Memorial Project, Mayor Jack O'Reilly was caught on camera calling him an obscenity. Okay. Tefelsky, who is the City Council Chairman Pro Tem, number two guy, if Susan DiBaggio wasn't there, he would be in charge of the City Council. He would be the leader, whatever, master of ceremonies, whatever. Anyway, but he wasn't last Tuesday. DiBaggio was there. But anyway, he had just finished, Tefelsky had just finished telling veterans who had attended that meeting that while he supported them and their causes, he was against the changed war memorial project and the increased cost the city was being asked to incur. Apparently, Mayor O'Reilly had asked that the war memorial, which is currently in the grounds of Art Space, former City Hall, Dearborn City Hall in East Dearborn, should be moved to an area in West Dearborn, and I would think near the new City Hall, which is called the Dearborn Administrative Center. But there's money to do that. These are big stones. Oh, my gosh. You know, these are big plaques and
statues.
And statues, too, yeah. I think. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And of course, there would have to be some landscaping in the new area, little patio, little chairs probably, for people to congregate. And so I'm assume might be $100,000. I don't know, maybe more.
As well as fixing the holes that they're going to take out after they take the statues out from the old place.
I just put some dirt in there, yeah. Let Art Space just toss their excess paintings or sculptures.
Put some measles up over there.
Just fill in the holes. I'm joking, of course. That's silly. Yes, of course, they have to fix up the grounds, too, if they're going to take them out. That's because Art Space owns that area now. So, well, if you're going to mess up their space, you got to, do something to make it, at least put in some dirt and sod and so on for them. All right. Well, here's how it went. Well, obviously, the veterans were kind of upset that he didn't want to support the moving of the memorial. Although I think, in my own opinion, what's wrong with keeping the war memorial in the grounds of Art Space? Of course, maybe they don't want it there. Maybe they don't feel it's artistic enough for them. I don't know, but I'm just saying it's part of the city and the city's history, so you should either move it to Dearborn Administrative Center or get it over to the Historical Museum. But that's getting filled with a lot of things, like where's that Mayor Hubbard statue? There. I don't think that's been put out on display or indoors yet either. So I don't want to overload them with too much stuff because they only have so much space there too. So in any event, it says the camera panned over to the mayor. Now, this would be one of the Dearborn city cameras that cover the events. You know, it goes on to cable TV. And I was wondering, can we watch the whole show that included this? But when the camera panned over to the mayor, because Mayor O'Reilly tried to offer an explanation about why the cost had climbed. They were higher than what was projected before. And when he did that, Tefelsky began talking over him with what the reporter says was a non-constructive comment. So it was something that was not pertinent to the issue, but basically cutting the mayor off, which is not very respectful, in a good meeting. Well, at that point, when the camera got onto the mayor, he was talking to the corporation counsel, the city of Dearborn lawyer, who was like next to him. They always, the woman who was the main lawyer for the city, I forget her name. Anyway, she's usually sitting next to the mayor. And it caught him saying, quote, an expletive. What an expletive. So you can fill in the blanks there for the word expletive. Because he basically was extremely disrespectful and not to the point, that is Councilman Tofelsky. And so he turned off to the side, but I guess his microphone was still on. But I'm just wondering whether the video was someone's cell phone, or did they actually grab video from the footage recorded by the city of Dearborn? Is that public information? Can you go and just ask for anything that was recorded from that meeting? And of course the question is, when this goes on to the cable TV channel in Dearborn, will it be edited out? I mean, it's a question. What, you're breaking up? Did I yell too loud?
I guess
I didn't say the expletive though. No. Little technical problem here in the studio. So it's just an interesting question. I'm sure that people are going to be checking their cable channels to see when that council meeting is going to happen, to see if this is part of it or whether they're going to edit it out. It sounds to me like, since the mayor was talking off to the side, he didn't intend himself to be recorded, but his microphone was on when he started talking. See, folks, they have all automated systems there. There's only one person, it's Craig with CDTV, and he controls the cameras and the panning and the zooming all from one control panel, which is in another room. And the microphones, usually for that huge panel, they have what's called an automatic mixer, so that who's ever talking, that microphone turns on, the other microphones turn off. But after you start talking, it stays on for a few seconds, you know, even of silence. And that's what happened. The mayor started talking, so his microphone turned on. Tofelsky started talking. Of course, his microphone went on too. But then when the mayor turned to the side to make a comment about Tofelsky's rudeness with that chosen language that he used, which I've never heard him use ever, but of course I think he thought he was off mic.
He must have thought he was off mic.
Yeah. Although if the camera was on him, then people could read his lips, maybe. So,
it's not something you want to see go into the archives either.
And, so I don't even think this should have been covered. Everybody loves sensationalism. Ooh, our mayor used a dirty word. But the point is, O'Reilly did email Tofelsky an apology. And he said, quote, "Rudeness never contributes to constructive dialogue and is therefore beneath the standard of behavior I strive to maintain." He went on to say, "At Tuesday night's city council meeting, I did not meet that standard. Therefore, I apologize for my inappropriate remark." The pressing guide also reached out to Tofelsky, who could not be immediately reached for comment. I think Tofelsky should have apologized to the mayor, because he's the one that cut the mayor off with, as the newspaper says here, a non-constructive comment. Okay, that's my comment on it. But I don't think that story should have been covered. But I do think the tension's flaring at the city council, just to let people know that the issue about the investigations of these two murders is important to the community. I hope Press and Guide will pick up the story from the Arab American News and get it in their papers and the Times Herald too, because I think that was more important than this little tit for tat. Can we say that on the air? Anyway, this little tete a tete, head to head, brouhaha. I love that. I have to look that up someday. But between these two people at the council meeting, it was only a few moments, and tempers flare. That does happen. By the way, speaking of council meetings, next Tuesday's meeting at Dearborn Heights City Council, Lisa Hicks Clayton, one of the council people, has put out a request that anyone experiencing problems with rats in the city of Dearborn Heights should come to the meeting and talk about their rats. Okay? Concerned residents are encouraging the community to pack the room, not with rats, but to pack the room with people so that something will be done to stop the rats. And apparently, a key issue here is that the city does not have what's called a certified vector control program. Not sure what that is, but that's something you need to do to help control the rat population. Now, I, being a Dearborn resident since 79, oh my God, what millennium was that in? Well, it wasn't 1879, but 1979 is when I first moved here. I've heard about the rat problem in Dearborn Heights since then. And it's more or less in the news, but it's ongoing. Dearborn has concerns and has rats in Dearborn. Rats are everywhere. They love modern society, by the way, and they have sharp teeth, and they can live in extreme conditions and you know, chew through garbage cans or whatever to get to food. And so it is part of modern urban life, and maybe even rural life, to have rats. But to find them overpopulating, apparently here is the statement from Hicks Clayton. That's her hyphenated last name. She says, residents are finding rats in yards, in the streets, destroying vehicles, wiring. Rats are indigenous to our watershed areas. Ah, watershed areas. She says, we must seek to manage the rat population, especially in light of our mild winter so far, which means rats are more
thriving.
Thriving, yep. Because they can move around more. They're not freezing to death as much. And maybe people are being more, they're putting more trash out or just more things that they can eat that would be put out in the yards than what if we had a lot of snow in the winter. Got it. Yes. Okay. And residents started a petition in January and gained 117 signatures before it closed. There was a cutoff time, I guess. One signer said she hopes the city will find a solution because she's worried about her grandchildren and her pets. She said the problem is so bad you can place a trap outside and a rat will be caught inside it before you even make it back into the house. Boy, those rats are pretty dumb, I guess. But you need a lot of rat traps, I guess, for all the rats that are over there. And by the way, I had a problem, I think I mentioned some one of these shows, a lot of residents in Dearborn have problems with raccoons. Raccoons are smart, though. They you know, we set some traps out because the raccoon that was in my attic got away. I mean, the few people were so scared of the raccoon. He's about 3 foot long. I mean, he was a big raccoon, you know, and he had chewed his way into part of my attic, not the whole attic, a part of the attic, and was comfortably living there for quite a period of time, and might have even had some baby raccoons. And I found out that raccoons are actually very, very smart. So he was smart enough to avoid the people with the nets, and of course he was big and heavy and powerful too. Rats are relatively small, most of them, I think. And they said, oh, just put here's a couple of rat cages, big cages for that. We want to capture it, and then, so just leave them around your yard and put peanut butter in there. They go for peanut butter, apparently. And no, neither trap worked. I just read a quote here that one woman said, the problem's so bad, John had to leave the room for a minute to help someone at the station. You can place a trap outside and a rat will be caught inside before you even make it back into the house. But that's a dumb rat.
Yeah.
Okay, I was saying that raccoons, they wouldn't fall for that. So I had those traps there with fresh peanut butter every day for 3 days, and there weren't any raccoons caught. So I'm too smart for that. But apparently, you know, it is a problem with raccoons too, but there's not as many. I guess they don't populate as fast as rats. They don't procreate. Can I say that on the air? I guess I can. So anyway, that's Tuesday. They need a two-pronged approach to tackling the issue while the city gets certification in vector control, whatever that is. Well, as I say, the first solution, even for people in Dearborn, is you remove sources of food for rats. Don't leave any food out in any way, and make sure that your yards are clear of trash and animal waste. And, of course, you have to keep your trash cans up off the ground if you keep them outside. I keep mine in my garage, actually, indoors.
Vectors have something to do with surveying and setting up the locations and lines of demarcation, so to speak, for the sites.
Yeah, and professional exterminators, of course, are part of that. But that's the second step, is you use an exterminator. And I don't know if they have a person hired at the city who isn't a professional. But it's this vector control program that has to get certified, too. by some state agency before they can proceed. Mm-hmm. Maybe it has something to do with where you fumigate, where you put the poison or something. Maybe that's part of the certification process. Anyway, everyone who's concerned about getting those rats taken care of, should attend the meeting at Dearborn Heights City Council. If you can't attend, you can call the mayor's office or the city council. The mayor's office phone number is 313-791. That's Mayor Paletka, 313-791-3490. Okay. And I think they're still on a four-day week over there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Trying to save money still. Okay. Allen Park, you know, was under emergency financial management for a while, and the first thing they did when they got out of that situation, they went back to 5 days service for the community. So, okay. But I think Dearborn Heights has still got probably the fifth day is when the rats take over the city hall.
Being looked at by the politicians.
Yeah, because there's nobody else there.
Right.
So they're hiding out there on Fridays. Okay, any other big-time stories? John, we've got quite a few events happening. So we've got about 12 minutes left in the hour. Highway 61 with Kitty Love comes up at 2 o'clock today. Best in Blues.
Well, yes, I want to mention a number of things here, but the February Musical Coffee House is Saturday. The East River Folk Society February open mic event is scheduled for 7 p.m. Saturday at the First Presbyterian Church Fellowship Hall, 2250 Oak Street in Wyandotte. And why that's of note even more so is that Lynn Grunst of WHFR is going to be the host. Admission is $3 for members and $5 for non-members. And it offers an open mic format featuring a variety of local musicians sharing their talents as well as refreshments afterwards.
That's great. Yeah. There is, and you just put this on your calendar while John gets his next story ready, on February 27th, and that's not too far away. Today is the 12th, so that's 2 weeks. On Saturday, February 27th, at the Henry Ford College Music Department, will present the 21st Annual President's College Concert. I'm sorry, that's the collage concert. Yeah, little bits of all different kinds of music. We have jazz ensembles, the big Henry Ford Big Band, Studio 110, Metro Symphony Band, a vocal jazz ensemble, blues fusion, women's choral ensemble, Renaissance Voices, and two mixed choirs, HFC Chorus and Vanguard Voices. So that's all under the direction of Rick Goward, Kevin Dewey, and Randy Knight. All here from Henry Ford College. So the collage concert is really great. Tickets cost $15, but of course the money goes to benefit the music program here. And it's at the Michael A. Guido Theater at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center. And that's Saturday, February 27th. So if you don't have some special place to take your loved one this weekend for Valentine's Day, there's still a chance, if they're willing to wait 2 weeks, because I'm sure that's going to be a lot of great entertainment. It's a great, great program. Collage concert of Henry Ford College coming up on the 27th.
And downriver, our Sacred Heart is a church on Gros Isle is having our fish fry beginning tonight from 4 to 8 at the Sacred Heart Parish Center. And we're also having Bill Bynum as our musical entertainment for tonight. We'll have different music, different entertainers each Friday, and great menu, come one, come all.
And that is, of course, a nonprofit organization, so we can plug that. We can also plug
Knights of Columbus is part of that whole, is putting this
right,
on.
Yeah. Right, right. Knights of Columbus here in Dearborn at their banquet facility on Park Street in Dearborn. That's not Park Place, but across from it, a little further west, is the O'Kelly Banquet Facility. They do a fish fry starting tonight, all during Lent. It's February 12th through March 25th from 11 a.m. They already started today, so they have like a luncheon fish fry all the way to 8 p.m. tonight. And they say in their footnotes here, it's the only fish fry where you can enjoy your favorite beer and fish. Not true, though, John, right?
Because
they don't know about the parish down in Gros Isle there.
Well, we certainly have beer and wine as well.
Yep. That's right. So if you got to have a beer with your fish fry. So is that on your diet, fried fish?
No, it is not.
Okay, no. Well, sorry. That's too bad.
They have homemade soups. There's some very good homemade soups being put
together. Well, John's got the menu here, and I have to say that the one in Gros Isle, besides the dinners, and there's cod, there's salmon, there's shrimp, and there's perch. Oh, my gosh. But all the different kinds of things, side orders, soups, children's menu even, including the infamous, well,
mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. Yeah. It's everywhere. Even a slice of pizza with mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the mac and cheese on top of the top of the pizza. But desserts. And so it's quite a great menu. Maybe that's the same as the one here in Dearborn at O'Kelly's banquet facility on Park Street. But if you're into that Lenten thing, then you typically don't eat meat on Fridays. And you give up other things all the way through the Lenten season, as I understand it. However, I have to say that among us vegetarians, or those who try to be, fish is meat.
Ah.
That we see fish as meat. So that's not really vegetarian, although if your religion says you can eat that fish because it's not meat,
right,
or the shrimp, well, good for you, I guess. Bon appetit. But I'm just saying, technically, fish is meat. So...
You can have a root beer float as well. So.
Sure, yeah. You can just take a couple sides of veggies they've got there.
Coleslaw will help you.
Pierogies, those are okay, as long as there's no meat in them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cheese pierogies.
Huh? Sure, okay. Having fun with that, folks. Let's see, a couple of other stories here. We had so many comments. I wanted to mention, because there's not time enough in the hour to... play them, but Jim Hightower, who's our progressive commentator on the national scale, he's now, in the last week, he's got two separate two-minute comments recorded about Flint, Michigan, and the water scandal, the poisoned water scandal, and of course the question now is, what did the governor know and when did he know it, and things coming out not only about the water, but about the whole link to Legionnaires' disease, which seemed to increase greatly right after the poisoned water started flowing into the taps. There was that story, and it just came up on, of all places, Michigan Capital Confidential, just today, in fact. Their website, they're part of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, that conservative think tank, and everything they think about is conservative, apparently. But they just reported this. Attorney General Bill Schulte here of the state of Michigan wants to withdraw as legal counsel for 7 former or current Michigan Department of Environmental Quality officials concerning legal matters surrounding the Flint water crisis. He doesn't want to defend them in court. Does that mean they're undefensible? Or that we shouldn't use state money, that is his salary and his team of lawyers, to defend them? Yesterday, he filed a motion in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan to withdraw as legal representative of these officials, including former MDEQ Director Dan Wyatt, who has, of course, was he fired or resigned? One of the two. He's out of there, but they're still up on charges. The motion would separate the legal representation of Governor Rick Snyder and the MDEQ as a government agency from that of the individuals who have been named in a lawsuit filed concerning the crisis. So I guess it means that he would still defend the governor if it came down to it, I guess. Wyatt resigned, okay, on December 26. 6 other department officials were named in Schulte's motion to withdraw.
Schulte. Bill Schulte?
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do I call him? Schutte? Schuette? It's actually spelled Schuette.
Right.
But that's not the way. Yeah. I mean, he wants to run for governor, so I guess we should, as a Republican, we should pronounce his name right out of respect. He is our attorney general, so.
Yeah.
Okay, U.S. District Court Judge John Corbett O'Meara granted the Attorney General's motion to withdraw as counsel for the officials, but he will not be allowed to represent the governor and the department until officials in the department have signed conflict of interest waivers, essentially agreeing to the new arrangement. So they have to agree with not being represented for free.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Why would you agree to not be represented by the Attorney General of Michigan and have to go out and find your own counsel? I don't think they'd sign. I don't know. Of course, politically, they'll never get appointed to anything else again. I'm sure. But, well, that's the story anyway. And, of course, the governor's office doesn't comment on pending litigation. So there's Schutte's office did not respond to a phone call offering the opportunity to comment. Even the conservative think tank, they can't get a comment from him. So it's not like he's the heir of American News or somebody else that might cause trouble. I'm not saying they would. I'm just saying they want all those points of view. Or Michigan Radio, I'm sure they would like a comment too. So, okay, anything else we missed, John?
Yes, very important. We must tell our listeners happy Valentine's Day coming up this Sunday. Very important.
Duh. Yeah, oh, yeah. I was going to save that for last. Our homelessness marathon.
And I have one other thing, too. Okay. To remember everyone deployed, wear red on Fridays. That's our, I always want to say
that's a veteran's thing. It's not just a women's fighting cancer.
But. Honor our veterans by RED. Remember everyone deployed, wear red on Fridays.
And it fits the theme of the weekend anyway with Valentine's Day. Yeah. So there's numerous excuses there if you need one. It's the last day for water to be collected here at Henry Ford College, bottled water to be taken up to Flint. We've been doing this now for a month, and I hope they have enough water. I mean, obviously people drink that water every day. I mean, the bottled stuff, and there's 100,000, almost 90,000 plus people in Flint, so I hope the state now or the federal government is going to take over. But the last shipment will be going up from Henry Ford College tomorrow, and it's room M109 in the Student Center building, which is Building M here on our main campus. Just bring it on in. Tell the guard at the visitor lot that you're bringing water in to help collect water to Flint, and I'm sure they'll let you park in that lot. You can donate money, too, here at Henry Ford College. That's just if everybody did one little thing, this is not big, but you know we're helping. And if you happen to be going to the store anytime, I bet they'll still be collecting until about, I'm guessing, about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
And downriver, we also have a big shipment going from Brownstown Township as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they can. And the question is, what do we have to do ongoing? Is there still enough water up there? Who's providing that water from now on?
I don't know.
Okay. We want to mention special programming WHFR, the final point here. It's WHFR Dearborn you're listening to, and it's the end of the journal. We want to mention that next Wednesday night, for several years now, we've been carrying a program via satellite called the Homelessness Marathon, and it's going to start at 7 p.m. Why? Because and it's going all the way to the next morning, 9 a.m., so we're going to be interrupting our regular programming for that period, starting again next Wednesday, the 17th, at 7 p.m., going to the morning of Thursday morning, February 18th at 9 a.m. And it's going to be originating live from Washington, D.C. That's right, our nation's capital, almost like every major city, has a homelessness problem. And why can't we solve that? We can. There's answers. But you get a lot of testimony from a lot of experts on the subject, people that have been struggling with it too, the homeless themselves. And it's not a telethon, folks, that we're doing. It is an awareness-raising event. When we first started carrying this national program, special program, they actually came to Detroit, and so many of our own volunteers got very energized by helping the broadcast overnight down in the CAST corridor. And it's something that we take as a special cause here at WHFR. If you don't know anything about homelessness and how the problems can be solved, if we choose to do so, of course, try to catch some of those hours of broadcast starting at 7.